TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
It's a personal pleasure to welcome you again to the TV Bible Study. We're studying the Bible history of the Old Testament. We're in a study of the books of Joshua through 2 Chronicles, the history of the Hebrew nation. We're particularly in the study of the conquest of Canaan. This is the 27th lesson in our series. Last week, we studied the central campaign. As Israel crossed the Jordan from Sidon to Gilgal and established there their base camp, and went up against the city of Jericho, and marched around it once a day for 6 days with the priest blowing the trumpet and the people silent, and then 7 times on the 7th day, and at the end of the 7th circuit, the priest blew the ram's trumpet even louder, and the people shouted, and the walls fell down from the inside out. And Joshua led his army in the city of Jericho, and they completely defeated it and devoted it unto God, and victory and fame was theirs. But we found out that they went up then to Ai, and because Achan, one man, had committed sin and taken of the devoted thing, they first of all are defeated at Ai. They take the time to investigate and to purge the camp of sin. Then they go out against Ai again, and this time they are successful, and the city of Ai falls, and with it also the companion city of Bethel. Then we learned in chapter 9 of a stratagem of the Gibeonites. The city of Gibeon came dressed as if they'd been on a long journey with old clothes. They were eating moldy bread, and they had their wine or their drink in old wineskins, and they put dirt upon their animals to make it appear as if they'd been on a long, long journey. They lied. And they said, "We've come from a long way away, and we want to make a covenant with you that you don't come and fight against us." Maybe, for some reason, I don't know why, Joshua is lifted up in pride because of his victory. And so he believes them, and he says, "All right, I'll make a covenant with you, and I'll not fight against you." But then it was revealed unto Joshua by God that these were the men of Gibeon, a city nearby. And so he said, "Now, because you've lied unto me, I'll keep my covenant. And I will not fight against you, and I will protect you if any enemy comes. But you will now become the drawers of my wood and the hewers, drawers of my water and the hewers of my wood. You'll become my ordinary servants and slaves." Our lesson today deals with a southern campaign and a northern campaign, and then the division of the land in the 12 tribes. The southern campaign begins in chapter 10. It involves itself in a confederacy of 5 cities. Those cities are Jerusalem in the north and Hebron in the south. And then going from Jerusalem over to the coastland, you've got Jarmuth and Lachish and Eglon. Those are the 5 cities that will be involved in the southern confederacy and in the southern campaign. Jerusalem in the north and Hebron in the south. And then going from Jerusalem to the coastland, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Eglon. Now read with me in verse 1 of chapter 10. "Now it came to pass that Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai, and had utterly destroyed it, as he'd done to Jericho and her king, so had he done to Ai and her king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them. And they feared," verse 2, "the king of Jerusalem and the other kings. They feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, as one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all the men thereof were mighty. So they make an alliance." Not one king thinks that he can stand before Gibeon, a great city. "So they make an alliance to go against Gibeon. Wherefore Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, and to Piram, king of Jarmuth, and to Japhia, king of Lachish, and unto Deber, king of Eglon." There's our southern or Jerusalem confederacy. "And they say, 'Come up unto me and help me, and let us smite Gibeon, So Adonizedek, the king of Jerusalem, calls these other four kings, and they say, you come up here and help me, and we will go smite Gibeon, for it had made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Now verse 5, here comes the battle against Gibeon. Therefore the five kings of the Amorites, notice we're calling over and over again the name the Amorites. The Amorites are the chief tribe in Canaan. Now there were other tribes, as we'll see in just a moment, but the Amorite is the chief tribe. Sihon was an Amorite in the land of Gilead. Bashan was an Amorite in the land of Og. An Amorite in the land of Bashan. And now these five kings are all called Amorites. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon, gathered themselves together and went up, and all their host, and encamped against Gibeon and made war against it. See, they want to defeat Gibeon because Gibeon has made an alliance with this powerful Jew, Joshua. And the men of Gibeon then, in verse 6 and following, send a message to Joshua saying, slack not your hand and come quickly, because your servants are under siege in the hill country by the Amorites. So verse 7, Joshua went up from Gilgal. Notice, they've gone back to Gilgal after the southern campaign is over. They've gone home to the base camp. So Joshua went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And Jehovah said unto Joshua, fear them not. He's always comforting Joshua, isn't he? He's always giving Joshua a reason to go on and fight. He says, don't be afraid of them, for I have delivered them into thy hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. Now it would have taken Joshua a good long while to go and war against Jerusalem and defeat it, and then go down to Hebron and defeat it, and then over to Jarmuth and defeat it, and to Lachish and to defeat it, and to Eglon and defeat it. So God just gathered them all together in one place for Joshua to smite. Saves a lot of time. See, Jehovah is fighting for Joshua even by gathering all of the enemies of the south together into one place. God is wanting Joshua to take the land quickly. In verse 9, chapter 10 of the book of Joshua, Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, for he went up from Gilgal all the night. Joshua's a shrewd general. I know he's helped by God, but he's also a shrewd general. He doesn't announce his coming, you know. He doesn't send a letter, I'm coming up here to fight you. But he marches all night long, a forced march, so that when the kings of the Amorites get up in the morning, they're looking not only at the city of Gibeon, but they're looking at Joshua's army. Verse 10, and Joshua discomfited them before Israel, Jehovah discomfited them before Israel. And he slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them by the way of the sin of Beth-horon, and smote them unto Azekah and unto Makkedah. And it came to pass as they fled before Israel, while they were at the descent of Beth-horon, that Jehovah cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Azekah, and they died. And there were more who died with the hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with a sword. You see, Jehovah fights by causing great stones to fall out of heaven upon them. But now then, the war goes on. Verse 12. Then spake Joshua to Jehovah in the day when Jehovah delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, son, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, until the nation had avenged themselves of their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher, the upright? And the sun stayed in the midst of the heaven, and hasted not to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it, that Jehovah hearkened unto the voice of a man, for Jehovah fought for Israel. There was a long day. The sun stayed up until finally Joshua had defeated the kings of the south. And so I read in verse 15, and Joshua returned, and all of Israel with him, unto the camp to Gilgal. In one long battle, I don't know how long it took, but in one long battle, Joshua and Jehovah had defeated all the kings of the south. Remember, Joshua killed a lot. But Jehovah killed more with the stones from heaven than all of Israel did with their sword. Joshua is not alone in his battle against the kings of the south. Now, the kings I talked about, beginning in verse 16, they had fled. But Joshua and the army pursues after them until those five kings are caught in a cave. And they are finally captured, and Joshua kills all of the five kings of the south. Now then, he's taken their land, he's taken their life, and he's taken their cities. So in two battles, in the central campaign, in the battle at Jericho and Ai, he took all of the central area. In one long battle, and in the slaying of five kings, in two actions, in a battle and in the capture and the slaying of the kings, Joshua has taken all of the territory of the south. Now then, in chapter 11 and 12, we have the northern campaign. And there's another confederacy here. See, the people gather themselves together again to fight Joshua and Israel. Joshua and Israel are soon being learned to be a formidable foe. They're being learned by these people to be a kind of an enemy that cannot be taken lightly. For they're not only great in number, Jehovah fights for them. In the north, there is only one chief city. And that's the city of Hazor. Now, Hazor is just to the south and to the west of Lake Hula, the waters of Merom. And the king of Hazor is a man named Jabin. But Jabin makes a confederacy with six of the tribes of the land, with the Hittite and the Perizzite, the Jebusite and the Hivite. Left out one, and the Hittite. Let's read together, beginning in chapter 11, verse 1, and we'll see this city, this man, and these six tribes. Chapter 11, verse 1. It came to pass when Jabin, king of Hazor, heard thereof, that he sent to Jobab, king of Madon, and to the king of Shimron, and to the king of Aksaph, and to the kings on the north in the hill country, and in the Arabah south of Shinaroth, in the lowland, in the heights of Dor, to the Canaanite on the east and on the west, and the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Jebusite in the hill country, and the Hivite under Hermon in the land of Mizpah. From all the way in the south to all the way in the north. I don't mean all the way in the south as far as down into the southern portion, but to the northern end of the Dead Sea, all the way to Mount Hermon. He gathered all of the tribes of the land together for one last attempt to defeat Joshua. This is their last chance. If this confederacy does not defeat Joshua, then Joshua has conquered all of the promised land. He has conquered from the river of Egypt on the south, under the great river, the river Euphrates on the north. He's conquered everything that God promised Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. If he defeats this confederacy, this is the last ditch stand for the people of Canaan. Look with me in verse 4 and 5 of chapter 11. And they went out, that is, all of these six tribes, with Jabin the king of Hazor. And they went out, they and all their hosts with them, much people, even as the sand that is upon the seashore in multitude, with horses and chariots, very many. And all these kings met together, and they came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight with Israel. Now the waters of Merom is Lake Hula, the small swampy lake in the north. So they're encamped right near the city of Hazor. And Jabin is leading all of these kings in battle. This is more people probably than Joshua has ever had to fight. I mean, they're as innumerable as the sand which is upon the seashore. Joshua this time will not outnumber the foe. But the foe this time will outnumber Joshua. He would have a tendency to be afraid, wouldn't he? The tendency of any man when outnumbered, when it appears as if he is going to be at a disadvantage, is to give way to fear. So in chapter 11 and verse 6, Jehovah said unto Joshua, be not afraid of them. Now he doesn't need to be afraid. But well, they still outnumber him. That's right. But Jehovah has told him not to be afraid. And if Jehovah says, don't be afraid, then there's no reason to be afraid. Jehovah says, be not afraid of them. For tomorrow at this time will I deliver them up all slain before Israel. And thou shalt hop their horses. That again means to cut the tendon in the back of the leg. A horse that is done that way can stand, but he can't move. If he ever tries to move, he'll fall and die. Thou shalt hop thy horses and burn their chariots with fire. Now I find out that these people are not just a bunch of people on foot, but that they have tanks, chariots, and they have the fast cavalry, the horses, that are going to be able to lead them in the battle. Now verse 7 of chapter 11 says, so Joshua came, and all the people of war with them against them by the waters of Merom suddenly. You see, Joshua still doesn't announce his coming. He comes upon them by surprise. And that's a great part of victory, isn't it? In any war, he who smites the first blow, if he does so by surprise, is normally the victor. It takes a lot to overcome a surprise attack. And Joshua is a smart general. He's outnumbered. Jehovah's told him that he's going to win, but that still doesn't keep him from using his ability and his intelligence. Even when God prospers a person, God expects that person to do what he can. He expects that person to use his sense. And Joshua is doing it in this battle. He comes upon against them suddenly, and he falls upon them. Verse 8 says, and Jehovah delivered them into the hand of Israel, and they smote them and chased them unto great Sidon. Now that's over on the coast. And unto the valley of Mizpah eastward. And they smote them until they left none of them remaining. They totally defeated the enemy. And Joshua did unto them as Jehovah bade him. He hopped their horses and burned their chariots with fire. Now notice what he does then to Hazor, the chief city. It's not been defeated. The army has been defeated. The army has been chased away. So in verse 10 of chapter 11 I read, and Joshua turned back at that time and took Hazor and smote the king thereof with a sword. For Hazor before time was the head of all those kingdoms. And they smote all the souls that were therein with the edge of the sword, devoting them. There was none left that breathed, and he burned Hazor with fire. You can read on. And you'll find out that he totally defeated not only that city, but all of the cities of that portion of the world. And in just one long battle, he had conquered all the cities of the north. In two battles, the cities of the central had been taken. In two battles, the cities of the south had been taken. In one battle against an army and one battle against a city, the cities of the north has been taken. Then in chapter 12, you have a summary of all of Joshua's victories. I'd suggest you read that. We're not going to take the time. But there are many tribes and many kings listed there who have fallen to Joshua and to Joshua's army. And when we complete, there are 31 kings, I believe, listed there. And as we complete chapter 12, you can say this of Promised Land. It has been totally defeated and occupied by Joshua. Then from chapter 13:1 all the way through chapter 22, the land is divided among the 12 tribes of Jacob's family. And I think that we need to look at that briefly to see where those tribes are found. Now remember, first of all, Joshua's army had defeated the eastern tableland. And in doing so, had taken the land of Moab on the south, and Gilead in the middle, and Bashan on the north. 2.5 tribes settled there. Reuben settled in the land of Moab in the south. And Gad settled in the land of Gilead in the middle. And 1/2 of the tribe of Manasseh, the other half will settle west of the Jordan. 1/2 of the tribe of Manasseh settles in Bashan in the north. Now they'd had to go, those men, they'd had to go across the Jordan and fight to take the promised land. They could not possess their land as long as their brethren could not possess west of the Jordan. Now west of the Jordan, going from the south to the north, here is the way the land is occupied. In the extreme south, Simeon is given a tribal possession, but by prophecy, he'll not have it long. Jacob said, if you remember, in chapter 49 of the book of Genesis, that Simeon would be scattered among in the promised land. So Simeon possesses it briefly. Judah soon absorbs it, and Simeon is scattered throughout all of the land. Just north of Simeon's territory is Judah's territory. Judah is the great tribe, the powerful tribe of Israel's land. In a narrow band across the land, just above Judah's inheritance, is Benjamin's inheritance on the east and Dan's inheritance on the west. Before long, the Philistines will take most of Dan's territory, and Dan will travel to the extreme north, right at the foot of Mount Hermon, and capture Laish and also dwell there. North of Dan and Benjamin's territory is the territory of Ephraim. Not a large territory, but the most powerful tribe in all of the north. Just above Ephraim is the territory of Manasseh, a huge territory that is there possessed by the people of God. And then surrounding the Sea of Galilee is Issachar and Zebulun and Asher and Naphtali. And that completes the possession of the promised land. These tribes will live in these areas throughout all of the time that they live in the land of Palestine, in Canaan's country. Now, God makes provision out of six of these tribes for there to be cities of refuge. Now, you read of this in chapter 20. It's not right. Yes, that's right. Chapter 20 of the book of Joshua. You'll read why these cities were chosen. These cities were chosen for one reason and one reason only. That is that if a man killed another man accidentally, that he had not planned or plotted his murder, but had killed him not intending to. Maybe, for instance, he was throwing stones off of his field down into a ravine or into a canyon. And a man might be traveling along there on an animal or sleeping there or something, and the stone hit him in the head and killed him. Then his brother, the one killed, had the right, by law, to kill the man who killed him. For the law said, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, life for life. But he not intended to kill him. It had been accidental. He could flee to one of these cities of refuge and present his case to the judges at the gate. And if the judges at the gate thought that his case was right and just, then they would give him refuge in their city. And then they would try his case, and if they found him innocent, then he could live in that city until the death of the high priest, and then he could go free, and the avenger of blood couldn't kill him. I don't know why until the death of the high priest, but that wouldn't be long. Maybe God wanted the avenger of blood, the brother, to have time for his anger to cool and to really see that this man had done it accidentally and not intended to kill the man at all. But he wouldn't have to live there long, because the high priest always became so old of age, because they waited until the death of the high priest to become high priest. So normally a man didn't become high priest until he was 50 or 60 years of age, and so he wouldn't be high priest long. But the man would find refuge there from the manslayer and the accidental slaying of death. Now let's locate these cities. First of all, in the north, let's go west of the Jordan, first of all. And in the northern part of Canaan, in the inheritance of Naphtali, there was the city of Kadesh. Central in the west, in the inheritance of Ephraim, was the city of Shechem. And then to the extreme south, in Judah's territory on the west, is the city of Hebron, which we've already located on the map, is one of the five cities of the Jerusalem Confederacy. Going across the Dead Sea, in the territory of Reuben, we find the city of Bezer. And then coming up nearly parallel to the Sea of Galilee, just south of it a bit, is the city of Ramoth, in the territory of Gad, in the country of Gilead. And then out of Bashan, parallel to Kadesh, but east of the river, rather than west of the river, we have the city of Golan. Those are the cities to which a person could flee if he had accidentally slain a man. Then in chapter 21 of the book of Joshua, the Levites get 48 cities scattered throughout all of this promised land. And the reason for this is simple. Not only that Levi might have somewhere to live, but because the priests of the tribe of Levi were the instructors and the teachers of Israel, wise men in the law, whose purpose and function it was to constantly keep the law before the people, they had to be scattered throughout all the land so that they could constantly be teaching the people the law of God. In Malachi 2, verse 7, Malachi says, "For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, that the people might seek the law at his mouth." And so God had schools throughout all the land. He had 48 university cities. He had 48 college cities. He had 48 cities where priests would set up learning centers in order that Israel might be taught the law. The 2.5 tribes returned to their place east of the Jordan in chapter 22. Then in chapter 23 and 24, Joshua gathers the people together. And he tells them in verse 14 and 15 of chapter 23 that not one thing that God had promised Abraham had failed to come to pass. All had been fulfilled. They possessed all of the land that God had promised to Abraham. That takes care of any claim of anybody today that Israel had not possessed all the land. They need to read verse 14 and 15 of chapter 23 of the book of Joshua. Then in chapter 24, just before Joshua dies, he gathers all the people of Israel together. And he says, "You choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods that your fathers served beyond the Euphrates or the god of the Amorites among whom you dwell. But as for me and my house, we'll serve Jehovah." And the people said, "We will serve Jehovah." Joshua said, "You can't serve Jehovah." And they said, "We will serve Jehovah." And he says, "Are you sure you'll serve Jehovah?" And they said, "We will serve Jehovah." And he said, "All right, God's heard you. And God will be a witness to you. If you ever go back on that promise and don't serve Jehovah, then God will send nations upon you to afflict you and judge you." And so Joshua died, being 110 years old. That's not true. Being 70 years of age. And now we find then the book of Judges about to begin. The people have pledged to themselves, to God and to themselves, that they will serve God. But we'll find out in our study of the book of Judges that they don't keep the promise that they made Joshua. Be with us in that study. God bless you in the study of His Word.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and His righteousness.
These lessons are available on video cassette tape for use with video cassette players or TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses: teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of His Word.